ॐ ज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकाय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. Welcome everyone to the ISV Sunday program, and especially those who have come from long way away. It's great to see you here. And we're offering our obeisances to Rupa Goswami, who is one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, as one of the intimate associates of Lord Krishna in the spiritual world and an associate of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in his Leela 500 years ago. He is the main acharya in our sampradaya. We are therefore called Rupanugas. We're followers of Rupa Goswami. And he wrote so many books that the author Kaviraj Goswami in the Chaitanya Charitamrita says that they're too numerous to count. But for us, the main and most important book is the Nectar of Devotion. Are you studying that in the Bhakti Shastri? You studied it? So studying in the Bhakti Shastri, it's the foundational book for understanding what is bhakti, what is bhakti yoga and the process of devotional service. As Srila Prabhupada used the phrase devotional service rather than saying just devotion or saying bhakti, because it implies some cultivation, as he says in the Nectar Devotion, based on the verse written by Rupa Goswami in his Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Anya Bilashita Shunyam Gyanakarma Nyanavritam Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam Bhaktirutama. That's the characteristic of pure devotional service, is that it's free from any motive for material gain or any kind of speculative knowledge. And the word anushilanam contains the word shil, which is a cultivation. It means that there's activity to use the senses in a certain way in order to come closer to Krishna, anushilanam. And it's also, they're used in a favorable way. Anushilanam is a very specific word. So there's a lot of instruction in that, and Rupa Goswami, as instructed by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was the empowered person to bring out those instructions. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself only, well, he's attributed to, the Shikshashtakam is attributed to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but actually it's a compilation of various things that he said. It's not that he sat down and he wrote the Shikshashtakam, but you'll notice in the Antilila that there are utterances of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that were compiled by Kaviraj Goswami, and therefore then we call them the Shikshashtakam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu worked through his associates to bring out the complete teachings of devotional service, and Rupa Goswami was an empowered representative of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. As I said, he was from a Carnatic Brahmin family, and due to some circumstances in the family, he had moved to a place in Bengal, Ramakeli, and there he took up the work in the government there, which was run by the Muslims at the time. Although at the same time, it's said in the histories that he also was responsible for establishing a Carnatic Brahmin community. So when we read about how, when he took leave from his work and told his boss that he was sick, and then his boss sent a doctor over to the house to see how he was doing and found out he had Brahmins all around him and he was simply studying Srimad Bhagavatam. We could see those Brahmins were part of the community there. Hence, Rupa Goswami was employed in the government along with his brother Sanatan Goswami. He was the middle of three brothers. Sanatan was the eldest, and Rupa was the middle brother, and then Anupam was the youngest of them. and whose son was Jiva Goswami. Anupam died fairly young. Of some, it's not mentioned in the history exactly, but he died when he and Sanatan were he and Rupa were traveling somehow or other. Anupam had died. And Rupa and Sanatan were high-placed ministers in the government of the Nawab, or the Muslim ruler at the time. And they heard about Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He was on his way to Vrindavan, and they went to see him. And just after seeing him, they decided that they were going to quit their jobs as ministers and join Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is significant, that the spiritually advanced person, when he or she sees an opportunity, realizes the true wealth in life, then becomes uninterested in material life. Srinivasacharya, writing about the Goswamis, says, Tyaktva turunamashesha mandalapati shrenim siddha tuchavat. The word tuchavat means that they threw away as insignificant. What did they throw away? Everything everyone else wants. Turunamashesha mandalapati means they moved in the most aristocratic circles. They had everything. They had learning. They were respected in society. They knew seven or eight languages perfectly. Rupa Goswami himself was a kavi, which is mentioned in some shastra somewhere. It says that in hundreds of years, there may be hundreds of poets, but there's only one or two kavis. It's a very specific designation. And they had wealth. They're very rich. But after they saw Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, tyaktva, they just gave it up. Tyaktva tunanamashesha mandalapati shrenim siddha tuchavat. And they went to join Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They came, Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with a sign of humility at that time was to put some straw in your teeth and then approach the superior. And they said, please consider us. You're accepting the most fallen, so we must be the most qualified, because nobody's more fallen than we are. They considered themselves like that, even though they were such qualified people. And Rupa Goswami actually left his post and went off with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sanatan Goswami was left behind for a while, because the governor, the king, actually told him that you keep working, you're not giving up your job like your brother did, or you're going to go to jail. And he put him in jail because he refused to work. And also, it's mentioned that there was some arrangement Rupa Goswami made, Sanatan Goswami also, before leaving, that they gave away half of their wealth to the brahmanas, they gave a quarter of it to their family members, and they kept a quarter of it for emergencies, which came in handy because Sanatan Goswami needed it to get out of jail. He had to bribe the jailkeeper. But they didn't just walk away. There was some procedure to make sure that everyone was taken care of, all their family members and such. They didn't just drop everything and go. They were careful to see that everyone was compensated and would be maintained and so forth. It's kind of an important point. Kumbh Mela on their way in. And so Rupa Goswami wanted to go with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu sent him to Vrindavan. He recognized right away that he was extremely advanced and qualified in so many ways. And he sent him to Vrindavan to excavate the holy places where Krishna had performed his pastimes, and to write about the process of devotional service, to write these books. And we say, Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam, Mano Bhishtam. Let's look at that verse, and you have your songbooks there. We say this regularly as part of our Mangala Charana. But since we're thinking about Rupa Goswami today, we'll look at this. You'll find it on page number 10 in your songbook, second verse down, Sri Rupa Pranam. We could say together, Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam. Sri Chaitanya, of Lord Chaitanya, Mana, within the mind, Abhishtam, what is desired. Stapitam, established, Yena, by whom? Bhutale, on the surface of the globe, Swayam himself, Rupa, Srila Rupa Goswami, Kada, when, Mahyam, unto me, Dadati, will give. Sva, his own, Pada, to the lotus feet, Antikam, proximity. When will Srila Rupa Goswami, Prabhupada, who has established within this material world the mission to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya, give me shelter under his lotus feet? Yet his mind was fixed on fulfilling the desires of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Mano Bhishtam, Mano Abhishtam. And this is the sign of real service. You have, in order to serve someone, you have to know what their desires are. And you have to want to fulfill those desires. In this sense, we say that the served and the servitor are one. Because really we become one in desire. If you are serving someone and you really want what they want, then you become a perfect servitor. In other words, you want to fulfill their desire. If you're a servitor but you have your own interests in mind, there'll be some discord. But this verse is saying that Rupa Goswami was perfectly in accord with the desire of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale. And this is evident in the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu with Rupa Goswami, especially in Jagannath Puri. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had taken sannyas. He went to Jagannath Puri as a consolation to his mother. He suddenly took sannyas. He just got this impulse and he told a few devotees and told his mother just the night before he was leaving. Nobody knew except for a handful of devotees. And then in the middle of the night, he left and went off to take sannyas, left his mother there disconsolate. And then he made an arrangement. After taking sannyas, he came back to his mother and said that, I must have been in a state of madness when I did this. How could I have ever left you alone like this? And what can I do now? He said, if you order me, I'll just come back. And she said, you can't do that. That would be a disgrace. But at the same time, if you go to Jagannath Puri and Navadvip are practically two rooms in the same house, she said. They're connected like that because the devotees are always coming to and from. And the bhav is the same. You know, when you go to Jagannath Puri, you feel Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's presence there and Lord Jagannath is there and all the devotees are very much in tune. And she said, you just stay there and then I can get news of you continually from all the devotees coming and going from that place. So he agreed to do that. So that's why he went to Jagannath Puri. And of course, when he went to Jagannath Puri, he also took some time to go to South India, did some preaching, traveling around for about 6 years. And then he came back and settled down in Jagannath Puri and was engaged in esoteric pastimes, which was really hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and the poetry connected to Srimad Bhagavatam in the association of Swarup Damodar and Ramananda Roy, who were his most intimate associates and completely knew his mind and his heart. So these two devotees, especially Swarup Damodar, was practically on the same level as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, says the Shastra, in understanding his feeling and so forth for Krishna. And then Rupa Goswami came there to Jagannath Puri, and he was staying nearby. Rupa and Sanatan and Haridas wouldn't go to the temple because they didn't want to cause any turmoil. Because, I mean, India is still like this in some places. If you go come in the wrong place, if you're not from the right caste or something like that, people get all upset. And back then, 500 years ago, it was like that. And so Rupa and Sanatan considered themselves contaminated for having worked in the employ of the Muslim Nawab. And Haridas Thakur was born as a Muslim, although he was the topmost of all of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's representatives, called the Namacharya, the topmost example of chanting the holy names of the Lord. And they lived nearby the temple. They would take darshan of the temple of Lord Jagannath by looking at the chakra. So if you can't go in the temple, then you can look at the chakra and offer your obeisances and still feel the same bhav. So they were doing that, but Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come to see them regularly. So one day when Rupa Goswami, of course, preceding this is an important incident, at the Rath Yatra in Jagannath Puri. This is a very esoteric, as Prabhupada said, a very feeling festival, the Rath Yatra. Because, and actually Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that this Kurukshetra is the pinnacle of the, contains the highest feeling in the philosophy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for Krishna. Because it's where the residents of Vrindavan came to see Krishna after he had left Vrindavan. And then some years later, they all came there for the solar eclipse. And they saw Krishna, but he wasn't in the same mood as he was before in Vrindavan, wearing a peacock feather and playing his flute, but he was there as a great king with many followers and chariots. And so they were pining for him in Vrindavan. And it's this separation. At the same time, they're together with him, they're just in front of him, but they're still feeling separation from him and the mood of Vrindavan, which is considered the pinnacle of feeling in Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy. So during the festival of Jagannath, which takes place once a year when the carts come, Jagannath, Baladeva, Subhadra come out of the temple, it's a fantastic festival. There's this huge road, grand road, in front of the Jagannath temple, which is an awesome sight in the true sense of the word when you see the temple even from a far distance away, which I hope you can still see. They're building so many hotels. But previously, it was the only thing you could see in Jagannath Puri. Even 40 years ago, it was like main imposing, you know, piece of architecture there. And it would take your breath away when you see the temple with the flag flapping in the breeze at the top of the temple. In fact, last night when I was at Damodar Vamsadhari Prabhu's house, he showed me he had one of the flags from the top of the temple there. And just seeing that flag makes your heart flutter a little bit also. And during that festival, the deities come out of the temple and they mount these gigantic chariots that they rebuild every year. You can go there early. If you go there about a month early, you can watch as they bring in all the wood and the artisans are there building the whole things, all these chariots from scratch every year. I think they still do that. They did the last time I stayed there for a while. Hopefully there's a few trees left on the planet. I don't know. And during the Rath Yatra festival, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would come with his followers and they would pull the chariot and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees would dance and sing devotional songs before the deity. And during the Rath Yatra parade, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began singing a song which was not a devotional song. It was a devotional song. I mean, this is the interesting part about this. It was a popular song of the time, maybe like you'd say something you'd hear on the radio, or dare I say, in Bollywood. Some song about separation between, you know, lovers. Really, at the time, there wasn't a verse to understand this kind of very esoteric separation that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was experiencing. So he began singing this song. And to some people who were on the outside, it may have seemed a little bit odd. But Rupa Goswami completely understood. Swarup Damodar understood exactly what he was doing, what he meant. But according to Kaviraj Goswami, only Bhakti Swarup Damodar could understand such things. But Rupa Goswami understood it so much, what was being sung, why Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was singing this apparently secular song about love during the Rath Yatra ceremony. Then when he came back to his hut, his little grass hut that he was staying on, and near the temple on the beach, he composed a verse which was in the exact mood of that song, to bring out the exact mood that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was feeling while he was singing that song. Shri Chaitanya Manopishtam Stapitam Yena Buddha. You see by this verse, he knows the mind of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He knows the feeling of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. This is the idea when we say he knew exactly how to fulfill the desire of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale. And then he's bringing that out to the world. That's also very profound, because knowing something and being able to teach it are two very different things. And he was expert in both things. So after he wrote this verse, and interestingly enough, back then, hard to imagine, but they didn't have laptops 500 years ago. Shocking, actually, isn't it? I can still remember when I didn't have a laptop. I remember when laptops came out. They were very heavy, bulky, and hard to carry. And my father missed that whole thing. He stuck to the typewriter to the very end. My mother switched over. She tried to get it. She got into the computer. I just remember my mother in one room using the computer, my father in the other room on the typewriter. They wrote a lot. And it wasn't so long ago. But what to speak, you go back another 100, another 200, 500 years when this took place. Everything was being written on palm leaves. I mean, where you get palm leaves at the time, what you'd have to go through just to get that kind of medium to write on. And you needed a stylus that was formed correctly so that you could imprint on the palm leaf. And it was one shot, that's all you get. It means that you'd have to compose everything in your mind. You know, on the type, they tell you now in writing classes, just write, don't worry about it, go back and fix it later. But back then, it was everything's composed in the heart, and then the mind comes out, and then you write it down, and that's it. And in fact, the writings of Rupa Goswami were so beautiful. They were, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw them, he said they were like rows of pearls. Rows of pearls, beautiful, beautiful handwriting. You know, from imprinting, you'd push the stylus on the palm leaf, and then you'd put it out in the sun, and then the part where you had touched with the stylus, it would turn a darker color, and the other would be gray. And interestingly, these palm leaves, they last for a long time. I mean, some of them 500, 1,000 years that you can get out of those. A lot of them are being lost nowadays because that's the way time is. Everything gets destroyed by time, just sort of wipes everything out. But especially nowadays in Kali Yuga, people are so lazy about spiritual life. They don't care so much about the Shastra. They're on to, you know, let's cut down all the rainforest, let's build up. Who cares about what happens? You know, let's just pump everything out of the ground. It's a demoniac mentality. The hell with, you know, all these scriptures. They don't really think about it so much. Shimakunda Datta was telling me that he's an authority on these kinds of things, Shastras and preservation and things, that thousands, tens of thousands of these kinds of writings are being lost every year in India. Because they're just in little villages and, you know, dogs sit on them and then the heat comes and they just blow away and in the wind, and they're gone. Source material's gone. That's it. So we should feel really lucky. You know, we have the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu written by Rupa Goswami. And the verse that he wrote that day was to bring out the feeling of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu at the Rath Yatra festival. What was he actually feeling when he spoke that secular verse. So he wrote it down in a palm leaf. And then Rupa Goswami stuck it in the roof of his thatched hut, and he went off for his bath. And then at that time, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was coming to see him, so he saw the palm leaf stuck in the roof, and he took it out, and he read it. And he said, "What? How did he know?" He was shocked. He was shocked how he knew my heart, how he knew my mind. So when Rupa Goswami came back, he out of love, he mildly slapped him and said, "How could you know what I was feeling?" And then he was so proud of Rupa Goswami, he introduced him to all the other exalted Vaishnavas, like Bhakti Srup Damodar and Ramananda Roy and whoever else was there, and asked them to recite some of his poetry. He was a little shy to do that. But when they heard some of the poetry, they were astounded at what a kavi he was, what an expert he was. And there's a verse there that says that poetry that doesn't make one's head spin, what is the use of such writing if it doesn't actually make your head spin and, you know, open your heart to the feeling of bhakti? So they all glorified Rupa Goswami, and there was Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was asking them, "How could he have understood my mind and heart?" And they said, "You empowered him." And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu admitted, he said, "Yes. When I met him, I recognized that he was a fully qualified person, and I empowered his heart to reveal such things." Taini brahma hrida ya adikavye muhyanti ya surayaha. Just as Lord Brahma is empowered at the beginning of creation, the author Kaviraj Goswami says. So in the beginning of creation, there's one created being, that's Brahma. He comes out. And then due to his fervent prayer, Krishna empowers him from within the heart. Taini brahma hrida yadi kaviye. He empowers that first living being from within the heart. He can empower anyone from within the heart, and he does. Those who are interested in devotional service, teshams, you had this verse today in the Bhakti Shastri, tesham satate yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam dadami puti yogam tam yena mam upayanti te. To those who worship me with love, I give the understanding. I illuminate their intellect so they can understand. Labdha buddhi awakens the spiritual intelligence so that person knows how to come to me, he says. And tesham ivanukam partam aham agyanajam tamaha nashayam yah babhavasto gyana dipena bhashvata. He illuminates the heart like as if with a lamp, so he can see. And his most intimate associates, they like Rupa Goswami, he was empowered from within the heart by Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to understand his mood and to reveal all the secrets of devotional service. So he did this through Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami, especially. And of course, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is a very unusual book. If you read it carefully, sometimes people read it for the first time and say, "What is this? I've never seen anything like it." I mean, it describes the process of devotional service, but then there is a categorization of all what is called rasas, different kinds of rasas or feelings. Rasa is an overwhelming feeling. Actually, we're sentient beings. We have feelings, right? And according to the Prabhupada in the introduction to Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, we live for this rasa. And rasa means there's an exchange of love between one living being and another. A family person works very hard so he can maintain a household, so he can have, you know, relationship with his family. And everyone has a certain kind of relationship. This is what we relish. So the book Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu gives a complete description of various kinds of rasas or feelings that one experiences through relationships with Krishna, through one's relationship with Krishna. And there's a history of this in India. And is it too hot in here? Are you stifled? Do we need to? It's too hot. It's like Jagannath Puri in June. We should never be too hot again now that we moved out of that little place. So, there was a sage named Bharat Muni. You ever heard of Bharat Muni? Bharat Muni was an authority on Natya Shastra. Natya Shastra actually dates before Bharat Muni, but he became an exponent of this kind of science called Natya Shastra, which is about drama. And you know the verse in the beginning of Queen Kunti's prayers? Natyo natya daroyata. How Krishna is like a dancing actor, he's a dramatic actor on a stage, right? So Natya Shastra. So there was a science of Natya Shastra which said that if you have a drama, and in that environment, all the members of the audience can be brought to rasa. That is, they can experience something altogether, like a tragedy. Have you ever been to a Shakespearean tragedy? My parents used to take me to theater all the time when I was a kid. We'd go to the Berkeley Repertory Theater in Berkeley. They back in the old days, they were fantastic. And they used to have all these dramas. And I remember one of them was so, it was a tragedy. Tragedy, you know, you can see from the beginning, it starts off, okay, you know something's going to happen. Everyone's star-crossed from the beginning. Something's really going to go wrong. And it was so, I mean, I remember being in my seat as a kid watching the drama, the tragedy unfold, and just being transported to another planet, practically. I was out of my body. And that's the whole idea behind this theory of Natya Shastra, that through drama, that one would be transported into a transcendent place. In other words, you'd come out of your false ego. Any kind of spiritual practice is meant to efface the false ego, to get out of the sense of myness that I am this body and so forth. Whether one's a personalist or an impersonalist doesn't matter, that you have to become free from this feeling that I'm the center. So the Natya Shastra there were many different theories and exponents of this, but especially Bharat Muni was the acharya of that, teaching about how through drama, one, and especially an experience of a group, all watching the same thing and experiencing the same thing at the same time, you would be transported out of this feeling that I am, you know, a certain person in this body, and you'd have a kind of a out-of-body experience. And it was all based on the science of rasa. So there are all the same kinds of terminology that you'll find in the Nectar of Devotion with the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, this you can also see in the Natya Shastra of Bharat Muni. And so this comes from, for what I can understand, Lord Brahma. There was a way in which there was some discussion between Indra and Brahma saying that the teachings of the Vedas and the process needed to be more visible and accessible to the masses of people. So the Natya Shastra came about. In any case, the Srimad Bhagavatam, which predates this Natya Shastra and Bharat Muni by thousands of years, is the perfection of this science of rasa. And Rupa Goswami, seeing that, studying the Srimad Bhagavatam, could perfectly applied this science that was well known about Natya Shastra to the Srimad Bhagavatam and brought it out and showed all these different categories of rasa. So it's not that he was following Bharat Muni, but he was actually bringing out the original Rasa Shastra, which was the Srimad Bhagavatam, and showing how by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, which is our main process for advancement, isn't it? Where does it say that in the Srimad Bhagavatam, in the first canto, second chapter? Tato jaya mudirayat. You know the verse? Narayanam namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam Devam Sarasatim Vyasam Tato Jayam Udirayat. This is our main means of conquest. Main means of conquest, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and many other verses that we recite regularly. Just by hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam, then you'll have this transcendent experience. You'll come to rasa. And this is what this whole science of bhakti, it contravenes the idea of the impersonalists, that emotion is bad, and that when you come to perfection, you become pretty much merged into a state of equilibrium where you don't have any feelings anymore. But the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, following in the footsteps of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and as is explicated by Rupa Goswami, say just the opposite, that the perfection of life is the highest feeling that you get when you love God. And that comes out through the verses and the drama and the poetry of the Srimad Bhagavatam by hearing it. And that's exactly what Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did. He would have Gadadhar Pandit read the Srimad Bhagavatam. Of course, Mahaprabhu couldn't read his own copy. He couldn't read it himself because he'd cry so much when he heard it that he couldn't see. He kept saying, "I'm so unfortunate, I can't even read the Bhagavatam." Even when he tried to worship his own deity, he said, "I can't do it. I'm so unfortunate." He would become soaked by his own tears, and he'd have to go change his cloth and come back. And his Bhagavatam was ruined because he cried so much. So Gadadhar Pandit used to recite Bhagavatam for him. He would listen over and over again. And Rupa Goswami shows in the Nectar Devotion, the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, this perfect science of rasa. And in all the other books that he wrote, there is also, in many of the other books, there's a greater explanation or more detailed explanation of many of these points. And not only that, Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami were the ones who codified all the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and made our Sampradaya what it is. That is, the great gift that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu brought. It was so, actually, he was so effusive in his emotion and the great acharyas who followed him, like Rupa Goswami and Sanatan, were able to take those teachings and put them into a form that would actually substantiate our whole sampradaya. For instance, Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. This one verse, this one statement in the Srimad Bhagavatam in the first canto, which chapter? Third chapter. Which says that there are all these different incarnations of Krishna, but Krishna is the fountainhead of all of them. He's the source. Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. He's the original. Not everyone says that. But we say that, and where'd we get it? From that phrase. And then Rupa and Sanatan, and especially Jiva Goswami, they bring out all the, they unpack that verse. And their teachings, like in the Sandarbha, it's the Bhakti Sandarbha, and Bhagavat Sandarbha, he proves through all the Shastras. They bring in all these Shastras. They're called Shastra Sunipana. They're expert in all the Shastras. Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipuno Sunipuno. They're expert in bringing together all the Shastras to prove this point, that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Otherwise, why are we worshipping him? And Kaviraj Goswami says, Siddhanta Bolya Chitta Nakara Alash. Don't be lazy about understanding these points. Don't think, whatever. But figure it out. Look at the Shastra. Understand it from all different points of seeing, as Prabhupada used to say. Discuss it thoroughly, threadbare. That's all possible because of Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, Jiva Goswami, the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They followed Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They understood his heart. And then they codified everything for us and for thousands of years in the future. You look at other religious traditions, you can see they have some basis for their following in writing. There's the Bible, which is a composition of different teachings of followers of Christ. And there is also the Buddhism. And there are some very succinct teachings that the Buddha is supposedly given. Hard to trace it all out, but Jamuna, probably after she gets her PhD at Berkeley in history, can tell us more about that. There were only a few, sermons that he gave, and then there were a few points that he made. And then from that, you get Buddhism all over the world. And Christianity is all over the world. One book, really. But now look what we have. The teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the whole Srimad Bhagavatam in 18,000 verses and the Bhagavad Gita with infinitely more detail about what is God, what is our relationship with God. It's called Sambandha. What is the Sambandha? Who is God and what are his energies? And then Abhideya, which means what is the precise process for being in contact with God? What is yoga or that connection with God? What does it really mean? Is it just be a good person and help the poor? Or is there actually a relationship and a way of developing that? And what is the fruit of that, the prayojan? The ultimate result is, according to Rupa Goswami and according to the science brought to us through the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, it's that ultimate emotion we call prema, of intense love for Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunoi Shravanadi Shuddha Chitta Kara Urdoi. It's there, but it needs to be reawakened. So what is that science? And now imagine how our sampradaya has a foundation with these literatures. That's why the books are so important. And one time I was sitting in Terkadamba. Terkadamba is a beautiful forest in Vrindavan. And even 15 years ago, you couldn't get there. There was no road practically. The place was flooded a lot. And now there's one Baba who lives there who's really transformed the place. It's amazing how one person who has a desire to serve can change something so much. One person. We see this in our assembly. One person with a burning desire to do something, and everyone gets affected by it, right? So one person wants to do some service for Krishna in a particular way. So this Terkadamba Baba, he lives out there at Terkadamba. Roads are terrible still. I mean, you ride in a car or a bus there, and you definitely need a chiropractor afterwards. I mean, seriously, it's like bombed out roads. They're so unmaintained. But when you get out to Terkadamba, it's so beautiful. It's right between Nandagram and Jawat. Jawat's the place where Srimati Radharani stayed. And Nandagram, of course, is Krishna's place. It's the palace of Nanda Maharaj is there. So beautiful. And this is right in between those two. Perfect place for inspiration. Actually, Terkadamba means it's a lookout place. And there's a grove of kadamba trees there, beautiful trees. And so Krishna would climb up those trees and he could look out to see where the cows were. He'd call the cows with his flute, which is kind of a casual instrument. It's more like an instrument for individuals so they can do their own thing, and that's what Krishna does. And he calls all his cows. He has big herds of cows. So the cows come there to graze, and also is a meeting place at night because, of course, it's between Nandagram, where Krishna stays, and Jawat, where Radharani stays. So there were rendezvous there. So it's a very inspirational place devotionally, and it's very remote, still one of the... Well, I was going to say it's still one of the quiet places in India, but there is no such thing anymore. I've conclusively decided because of the machine age. There's always some pump going somewhere, some loud noise to ruin it. You just have to tolerate. So in that place, Rupa Goswami, and this is good for devotional meditation, to go to a place, pastoral place, where you can sit and remember Krishna's pastime. So it's important sometimes to go and sit in these holy places. And this is one of the beautiful places you can go. You can just spend the day out there. And you won't be harassed for money or anything like that. Barely anybody goes out there, except some devotees will come out there. A busload of devotees will come and go around. But there are places you can hide when they come and go and just be on your own and chant there. I was there a couple years ago, and I had this really powerful revelation afterwards, because I came back. It must have been many years ago, the first time I went there, because then I came back, I was still working at the San Francisco airport. Not as an employee, but distributing books. I had my own booth out there for a while. And I remember that I had just been in Terracadumba, and I was thinking about how Rupa Goswami had sat there and he had meditated on Krishna and was writing his books, including the Nectar of Instruction. I mean, he actually sat and wrote that book in deep meditation under some tree somewhere, and it was in Terracadumba. So I was in the airport, and I sold a Nectar of Instruction to a young student from Taiwan. And he was very appreciative that this was a bona fide Indian book that was from an ancient teacher, and that it would tell him something about yoga. And he put it in his little carry-on pack, and he walked off and caught his flight. And as he walked away, I was thinking, what would Rupa Goswami think about this? What did he envision that, you know, there would be airports? Did he envision that Prabhupada would go around the world and, you know, establish this sampradaya, and that he would bring the books out? I mean, how Rupa Goswami's book was brought from underneath a tree in Terracadumba, written on a palm leaf, and then passed down to us. This is the parampara. It's greatest, isn't it? How that esoteric teaching that took place by great inspiration from an acharya who's actually an associate of Krishna in the spiritual world and an intimate servant of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how that came down, and how a Taiwanese student then just took it and flew off on an airplane. And somewhere, I imagine, that book is sitting in Taiwan on somebody's shelf. Maybe someone read it. Maybe someone's following Krishna consciousness because of it. And if they haven't, sooner or later they will. So I was appreciating how the great acharyas, through their intimate connection with Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in most particular how Rupa Goswami, because Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam, Stapitam Yena Bhutale, with his intimate understanding of the mood of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and following the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, compiled these books. And now how we have them, they're available to us, and they're going out to people all over the world who can take advantage of them. It really made my hair stand on end thinking about that. It was also a revelation that's our connection to Rupa Goswami, to the author. What is an author like more than anything? He likes people to read his books. What is he like even more than that? People to distribute his books. It's a fact. You know, when Prabhupada saw that devotees were distributing his books, he was like, come over here, I want to talk to you about this. Once when we were in Washington, D.C., I was at National Airport with Pragosh and Subhuti Roy, and I had a penchant for staying out later because I like to do a little bit more at the end of the day, so I took a cab home. Big mistake, because they came home in the temple car, and when they pulled up, Prabhupada was there in 1976, July. Kumbh Mela 2. And and as soon as they pulled up in the car, and Prabhupada saw them get out of the car wearing pants and shirt, which was rare back then. I mean, it meant something was going on. He said, what's that? He asked Hari Sari. And Hari Sari said, they just came from the airport distributing your books. Prabhupada said, call them in. And Prabhupada was staying in a little house that's still there on the property in Washington, D.C. in Potomac. So they went in there, and Prabhupada he debriefed them. So what are they saying? What are you saying? Pragosh told Prabhupada there was a serviceman in the airport. And there were lots of servicemen in the airport that time because it was there was a lot of military buildup because of the Vietnam War. So we'd approach a lot of servicemen, and Pragosh was showing the Bhagavad Gita to one of them and saying that, look, this was a military man. Arjuna was a military man too. And he was going into battle, and he had this, he was overcome with despair and emotion going into the battle, and thought, I don't want to do my duty. And then Krishna enlightened him, changed his mind. And this military boy was very enthused and bought the book and gave a generous donation and so forth. Prabhupada was very interested to hear that. He gave him mango ice cream and then sent him home. And so I was thinking how this is a connection to Rupa Goswami. When you distribute his books, when you read his books, of course, you're connected with him. A miracle in and of itself, that you're able to have that book and read it and apply it. And then if you also distribute it to others, which was his intention of writing it, of course. I mean, he says, and the Goswamis say, that I'm writing these books for self-purification. But obviously to establish the sampradaya. Nana shastra vichara naika nipuno shaddharma samstapako. Shaddharma samstapako, to establish the sampradaya. So we have a very, very, very firm foundation in our spiritual life based on the fact that we have these teachings of Rupa Goswami given to us out of mercy, pure mercy. And we can take full advantage of that. Twayam bujaksha kila sattvadami samadina deshika. Can you look in the shloka book? Twayam bujaksha kila sattvadami samadina veshita chetasaike twatpada potena mahatkritena kurvanti govatsa padambhavabnim. I got it. Twayam bujaksha kila sattvadami. So the demigods who are praying to Lord Krishna within the womb, said, Twayambhu jakshakila sattvadami samadina deshita. That with one pointed attention, if someone thinks about Krishna, he's in samadhi on Krishna. And also follows in the footsteps of the previous acharyas. For that person, the ocean in the material world shrinks to the size of the water contained within the hoofprint of a little calf. And the literature that's left behind by the great acharyas like Rupa Goswami is compared to a boat. Their teachings is compared to a boat to cross the ocean. But those teachings and the very act of following these acharyas is so powerful that as soon as you approach the boat, in other words, your full intention is, I'm getting in the boat, I'm going to take this across. As soon as you approach the boat, the ocean shrinks. That's how powerful following is. Following. If you follow the acharya, then everything becomes available to you. If you don't concoct, as soon as you concoct something and you think, I know better, become over-intelligent. Of course, you don't want to be under-intelligent either, as I heard a Kurnas say the other day. Some people, that's over-intelligent. Yeah, but don't be under-intelligent either. But don't concoct anything. Find out what Rupa Goswami wrote in the Nectar Devotion. It's the most important book. And then follow it. That's all you have to do. And if you do that, then the ocean of the material world shrinks to the size of the water contained within the hoofprint of a calf. Govatsapadam. Everyone say Govatsapadam. Govatsapadam. Yeah, a little calf. Puts his foot in the mud and then you get a tiny little puddle. Not even a puddle. It's a, I don't know what you call a tiny puddle. There should be a new word for that. But at Govatsapadam, that's how you can just easily step over. So by the mercy of Rupa Goswami and the great acharyas, we're given that opportunity. Everything's there before us. It's the rope that's lowered down to us. We just have to hold on to it, find out what the teachings are, and then follow. Now we'll take some comments or some questions. Hansapriya. And by the way, we're broadcasting today live from the Himalaya. Did you know that?
Thank you for elaborating the word manovistam. It really manifested in our heart by increasing the attachment and love and affection for the teachings of our acharyas. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Hansapriya.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you so much for a wonderful class. You were talking about the...
Why is that going so... Is that maybe pointed a little bit away from the speaker, something?
When you're talking about the chakra, so this time we were fortunate to be in the Jagannath Puri, and we were fortunate to have also one panda. So we saw that whenever he used to come out of the temple, like the last time he could see, he will surely offer obeisance to his chakra and will come out. So I was just moved by his love to Jagannath temple and how he was very, very particular. Wherever, whether he comes four times out, he will see chakra, he will pay obeisances, then he will go out.
Who did that?
The panda who was with us.
Oh, I see. So offering obeisances to the chakra.
Yeah.
Nice. For those of you who are following online today, you can text in at 650-245-7018. That's 650-245-7018. 650-245-7018. Where operators are standing by to take your calls. Yes. Vrindavan Priya.
Actually, I was on the phone earlier before I came in, and I heard you were saying something about the Natya Shastra.
Yes.
And about dramas. So I was not sure if I missed anything in that particular section. So is there anything in particular you would like to say about dramas?
Well, I don't know what you heard and what you didn't hear, but just that it's there's a science which has which was brought forth by Bharat Muni and popularized, and then later there were some Kashmiri Shaivites who became very enthusiastic about the whole science and also propagated it, that through drama the audience could have a transcendent experience. They would experience rasa, this intense emotion, overwhelming emotion, and they would be in the moment. Very rarely are we ever in the moment. I'm always thinking about the future or the past, but that through this medium of drama, one actually would be transported, and in that, and that Srimad Bhagavatam is transportative, and that's exactly how Rupa Goswami presented this. That by hearing Bhagavatam, the rasa would be awakened, and you'd actually be connected to the transcendent rasa, and that would be your connection. That is your connection. You'd feel your eternal connection to Krishna. Yes.
Thank you, Prabhuji, for very nicely explaining that how just distributing literature is pleasing whole parampara. And the one question I have, like you mentioned, that means when you take shelter of acharyas, the ocean of material world, like it sinks to the puddle of the calf. But if we concoct with our over intelligence, then it may not work out that way. So can you elaborate that in our life to see that we are not concocting or we are not deviating from Acharya's teaching?
Well, this requires the right mood, for one thing. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Tadvidi pranipatena priprashnena sevaya upadakshantite jnanam jnaninas tattvadarshina. That you should approach a person who is qualified, has knowledge, is authorized to give the knowledge, and you should do it in the right mood. What is the right mood? That you should, first of all, pranipat means you're going there in submission, you're submitting. I don't want to, when I went to school, I noticed that students weren't all that submissive to professors. I was shocked, actually. So I've been trained as a brahmacharya, and I went into some college classes, and there would be people sitting there with their feet on the desk practically, and I just noticed how important it is to be submissive. If you're going to hear from somebody, you have to accept them and be open and not challenging. You have to submit. So tadvidi pranipat. Pranipat means you go forward with an open heart. Prashnena means that you should ask relevant questions. And if you go forward to a qualified teacher with an open heart, you will have these kinds of questions. You will have these kinds of questions because you'll feel that I have no other recourse, I have no other shelter. And because you want to make progress, you'll ask and you'll feel comfortable to ask. And then sevaya, you should render service. Because yasya devi para bhaktir yata devi tatagaro tasyaite katita hyarta prakashanti mahatmanaha. That when one has implicit faith in both Guru and Krishna, and faith is proved, by the way, by service. It's not, you say, I have faith, but I'm not going to do anything about it. Your faith isn't proved. Try that on your husband or wife when they come home and say, yeah, I really love you, but I'm not going to lift a finger to help. Or I almost cooked you dinner. That's how much I love you. But if you actually love someone, then you prove it. Your hands and feet move, everything moves in that in seva. And by seva also, you connect yourself to the heart of that person, and even to the previous acharyas. As I was saying, you'll feel a connection to Rupa Goswami when you distribute his book, and you will have a connection to him. So through these ways, that they're very practical, we can begin to understand the mood of the previous acharya. And as I said, yasya devi para paktir yata devi tata garo tasya ite katita hyarta prakashanti mahatmana. Only unto one who has implicit faith in the spiritual master and in Krishna are all the imports of Vedic knowledge revealed. By that you can understand properly. So, you know, we should be faithful and try to understand what are the teachings of the previous acharyas in that mood. And Krishna will help us to understand how to follow properly. Yes, a text. Okay.
Yeah, thank you so much, Maharaj, for such a wonderful class. I was just going to add, you were asking a question whether they still make the yatra cards and Jagannathri now. And so when I was there earlier, the same panda that Mukhadwin was talking about, he said that they do make the cards every year, and which particular, they make it out of a neem tree, and which particular neem tree are they going to use, or a set of neem trees that they're going to use for the cards, that is revealed in a dream to the pujaris. And Basically it's a neem tree which will smell like a chandan tree though. So
I see.
That's how it goes.
Must be a big tree, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. Shyamalangi, thank you for that.
You were mentioning about Kurukshetra, that it, you know, contains the highest feeling. And I've heard that the Rathyatra, you know, pulling of the chariot, it depicts, you know, Krishna's chariot being pulled in Kurukshetra by the Brajvasis and by the Dwarikavasis. But I don't have, I don't know a lot of details. Can you just elaborate on that?
Yeah, the idea is that the Brijavasis are there, and they want Krishna to come back. They're pulling him back to Vrindavan. And that they're in that mood. Please come back to Vrindavan. Prabhupada mentioned that in one of his talks. Yeah, they're pulling him away from that opulent place of Dwarka back to Vrindavan.
Maharaj, Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami didn't have a family, like they didn't have sons and children?
They may have. There's not a lot known in all the history books, even their previous names, although Dabir Kash and Sarkar Malik are mentioned. Those are titles, they're not really names. And there's not extensive history that I've read in any of the scholarly books about them that mention numbers of family members and things like that. So I can't say definitively. Yes.
You said that in the Rupa Goswami, he said that the ocean, the material ocean, shrinks to a puddle in the hoof print. So I was reminded of a very mundane example from the modern science. The scientists were speculating that these galaxies are so far away, how can we, and we cannot travel faster than light, speed of light, so how can we ever reach there? But then they were speculating a theory that how if we can contract the space, because there is no restriction on how fast you can contract the space. And looks like we have already a prescription in the Rupa Goswami's instructions. Looks like bhakti can take you there.
There it is. Yeah, interesting about space. Mentioned in the Brahma Sanhita, ekopyaso, too much gain, something. Ekopyaso racharitum jagaranda kotim, yat shakti rasti jagaranda chaya yaranta, andantarasta paramanu chayantarastam govindamari purusham tamaham. He's an absolute undifferentiated entity. And he's there within every atom in his completeness. It means within every atom, Krishna is completely there. His full Krishna is there. And that means within Krishna also, then you go inward and you'll find that all the universes are there within Krishna again. And then within each universe, there are all the atoms, and then within each atom, there's more universes. That's not speculation, but it's actually Shastric. We know from the story of Mother Yashoda, who received rumors from some of Krishna's playmates that Krishna had eaten dirt. And she was furious. She said, Krishna's eating dirt again. Get him in here. Sit down. I heard you're eating dirt. Why are you eating dirt? And he said, I didn't eat dirt. They're lying. They're making up things about me. And he said, just look in my mouth if you don't believe me. So she sat Krishna on her lap, and he opened his mouth, and she looked in, and then she saw that she was sitting there holding Krishna on her lap. And then she saw the whole universal system also within his mouth, and that there was, within that universal system, there was another Mother Yashoda sitting with another Krishna on her lap. And then within that, there was another one, an infinite extension of Krishna, because an undifferentiated entity. Then she's, okay, close your mouth. I don't want to see this anymore. Just don't do it again, that's all. So Krishna's in every atom, and he's all-pervading. So some of the yogis, they actually use this principle of how the multi-dimensions of the universe. Prabhupada mentions how yogis can dive in the Ganges on an upper planetary system and then appear on another planetary system where the Ganges has reappeared. Narendra.
You know, you talked about this.
You got to put that microphone one inch from your mouth. Yeah.
You talked about rasa. What is this rasa? Rasa cannot be a feeling, because our feelings are all attached with body.
Well, they are now.
Our feelings are all bodily feelings. And so when you are talking about rasa, it is not a feeling. It is
It is a feeling, but the rasa we're experiencing now is material rasa. I have affection for my wife, family, country, for the 49ers. It's intense rust for the 49ers. And so then that's a kind of rust. Everyone has this kind of feeling like that. But it's perverted, because it's directed towards material entity, something that we see as separate from Krishna. But when it's redirected towards Krishna and Krishna's energies, then it becomes purified. When it's separated, then it's maya. Ritertam yat pratyeta na pratyeta chatmani tadvidyadat manomayam yata abhaso yata tamaha. Krishna told Brahma that whatever you see that's separate from me, that's my illusory energy. Because there's nothing separate from me. But if you see it as separate, that's maya, that which doesn't exist. And there's a way in which we always feel. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Nahi kashchit shanam api jatu tishtatya karma krit karyate hyavasha karma sarva prakriti jayargunai. Can I have that verse, Molly? I'll just read you this purport to give you the quintessential. Just give me it out of the Gita. Third chapter, sixth verse. And this verse says that no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. Nahi kashchit shanamapi jatu tishchet yakarma krit karyate hyavasha karma sarva prakriti jair gunai. Thank you. Everyone is forced to act helplessly according to the qualities he has acquired from the modes of material nature. Therefore, no one can refrain from doing something, not even for a moment. And here's Prabhupada's purport. It is not a question of embodied life, but is the nature of the soul to be always active. Without the presence of the spirit soul, the material body cannot move. The body is only a dead vehicle to be worked by the spirit soul, which is always active and cannot stop even for a moment. As such, the spirit soul has to be engaged in the good work of Krishna consciousness, otherwise it will be engaged in occupations dictated by the illusory energy. In contact with the material energy, the spirit soul acquires material modes, and to purify the soul from such affinities, it is necessary to engage in the prescribed duties enjoined in the shastras. But if the soul is engaged in his natural function of Krishna consciousness, Whatever he is able to do is good for him. The Srimad Bhagavatam affirms this. Chakva sudharmam charanam bhujam harer vajana pakvo tapatetado yati yatra kva vabhajram abhuda mushakim kovarta apto bhajatam sudharmata. If someone takes to the process of Krishna consciousness, even though he may not follow the prescribed duties of the in the Shastra to execute the devotional service properly, even though he may fall down from the standard, there's no loss for him. But if he carries out all the injunctions for purification in the Shastras, what does it avail him if he is not Krishna conscious? So the purificatory process is necessary for reaching this point of Krishna consciousness. Therefore, sannyas or any purificatory process is to help reach the ultimate goal of becoming Krishna conscious, without which everything is considered a failure. I just wanted to point out the fact that Prabhupada mentions that it's not just in conditioned life that we're active and full of emotion, but also the source of that emotion is actually the soul. We're sentient, means we have senses, means we have feeling. And in the spiritual world, there's the full pitch of that feeling comes out in for Krishna. So real spiritual life, the pinnacle of spiritual life, means when the rasa is purified and it's in relationship to Krishna. And that's what the subject of the nectar of devotion is. You'll find that Rupa Goswami shows how all the emotions that we have in our conditional life are actually reflections of those that we have for Krishna in the spiritual world. And I'm feeling the rumblings, so I know that the class has come to an end. We won't be able to hold back the Kumbh Mela now. It's coming. So now we're going to put away all the books and the asanas efficiently, but with great respect. We're going to climb down from the Himalaya mountain here where we've been perched. And we're going to have an artik ceremony with kirtan. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, hey! Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.